Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 85 of The Law Entrepreneur. My name is Neil Tyra, and today my guest is Jeff Banner. Jeff is a estate planning and elder law attorney in Western Pennsylvania, just north of Pittsburgh. And Jeff, as you will hear, has grown his practice from a single office right out of law school to a thriving six-office practice with four attorneys and 15 team members. And he's going to share with us how, you know, he was able to do so, and particularly through relationship building and systemization of the processes in his law practice. So I hope you enjoy this interview with Jeff Banner. Jeff Banner, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thanks, Neil. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us today, Jeff. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Oh, isn't that a loaded question, Neil? Well, I own a law practice in Western Pennsylvania. In total, we have six offices and four attorneys and about 15 team members that rotate between the offices, and what we do is focus exclusively on elder law and estate planning. So getting ready to start my ninth year here, and it's been quite a fun ride to this point. But yeah, that's a little bit about who we are, and I own the firm, veteran-owned law firm. So prior to going to law school, I went to spent about 15 years in the military, airborne ranger, drove a tank for a while. So I had quite an interesting journey to be sitting here today with you guys.
Well, thank you for your service, Jeff. Tell us, when you came out of law school, did you go right into practice on your own, or did you take a stop at big law, or how did that transition work?
Well, I did a research, did quite a bit of research before answering that question for myself back then. But went around and interviewed as many solo practitioners as I could find. And every time I met a solo practitioner, one would say, well, you got to practice at the DA's office, or, oh, you got to go into big law. But there was one consistency with every person I interviewed. Oh, I wish I would have done it sooner. So right out of law school, I was the only one out of about 250 graduates to hang a shingle. So I got, as soon as I got my bar license, I was at the bar association looking for clients and didn't know. I read the books, but starting from scratch, right out of law school.
Well, one of the reasons for this podcast is to answer the question, what they didn't teach us in law school about running a law practice, which is significant. So did you have any prior business background or in the family entrepreneurs that gave you that entrepreneurial spirit that led you to doing a solo practice right out of law school?
No, actually, in the family I did. My family was a family of teachers and educators. And so I was the only one in recent history to go to the service. So I had a ton of confidence going into law school. But law school will definitely take some of your confidence away. I think we're all familiar with that.
Absolutely.
But I had my undergrad degree was in marketing, and it was suggested to me by a family member that, well, if you're going through that much misery, might as well do the MBA at the same time I was going through and getting a law degree. So I got the law degree and the MBA at the same time. So that gave me a pretty good foundation to hit the ground running.
And your military service, did that pre-frame you for trying to help veterans and others with a military background?
I was not necessarily. I would say what the military gave me. Now veterans planning and VA planning now is a very important part of my practice. I enjoy that. But, you know, what the military gave me was a lot of confidence, and I did a lot of really hard things and overcame a lot of obstacles and had the chance to, you know, to lead a, you know, when I decided to leave the service after about 15 years, the law practice was picking up, you know, at the height of, I was an infantry first sergeant, so I was in control of about 80 different guys at one time. So there was a leadership component there that makes it, I think, gives me somewhat of an advantage over others, because that's probably the most difficult part once you get a larger practice, is managing the personalities and the expectations and keeping everybody trained and happy and the boat rowing in the right direction, if you know what I mean.
Sure. So here you come, and you're out of law school. You've got this military background. You're brimming with confidence. You do the smart thing and interview a lot of solo practitioners and decide that's what you're going to do. You're going to open a solo practice straight off. Had you decided at that point on a practice area, or what led you down the path towards where you are today?
Well, my first encounter with trying to find a client was first day I had my license, I could actually practice law, went into the Bar Association and asked, just introduced myself, and the phone ring, wouldn't you know it? And on the phone, the administrator at the bar office was talking about that it was a PFA and asked me right over the counter if I did those. And I said, sure. So I got on the phone and quoted the fee and said, I'll see you at 8. I got off the phone and I hung it up, and I said to the Bar Association administrator, what is a PFA? So it's in law school, they teach you how to figure stuff out. You're not going to know anything. And even after almost, you know, starting my ninth year, you know, I still come across stuff daily. So you just got to have the confidence that you can figure it out. And that's what every law school teaches you to go actually find that answer. But how I got into elder law was within the first year of practicing law. I had a practitioner a number of years ahead of me that suggested it, just because there was such a void of practitioners and it was such a growing market that I went to one of the elder law conferences here in PA, and I really got interested in the practice area. We're a general law practice. You have happy clients and unhappy clients, and in elder law, it seems to be more happy clients, and you're always helping, and there's not always the adversarial on the other side to make up that dynamic.
I had the same epiphany when I transitioned from being primarily a litigator to doing estate planning, because the nature of the relationship with the client is different. Now, the nature of the need of the client is also different. So it requires a different approach to marketing and looking for those type of clients. They're not coming to you because they have a problem. You have to go help them understand that they have a need that you're able to solve. So it's a different paradigm. But I agree with you. The clients in elder law and estate planning are generally happier than the clients in family law and criminal defense.
Oh, I agree 100%.
Yeah. So your practice is mostly estate planning and elder law, or elder law and estate planning, or 50-50, or how's that work?
Right now, I'm probably closer to 60-40. 60% being the elder law component, meaning so estate planning is what happens to my stuff after I pass away.
Right.
And elder law is a component of what happens to my stuff if I get sick before I pass away. You know, so it's the two areas together. So probably 60% of my practice is those families going into crisis situations where the healthcare costs are spiraling out of control, $10,000 a month on the nursing home. How do I keep grandma in the home longer? How do I get benefits to pay for in-home care workers? So the crisis work, it's a lot more stressful than just the general estate planning, you know, putting a will or designing a trust when everything's going smooth. So I would say 60% crisis, Medicaid, working through very difficult things with family members to pay for healthcare, and then probably 40%, maybe a little bit more on the general estate planning, wills, powers of attorney, trusts, those conversations.
Yeah, I think in particular, elder law comes in two flavors, crisis and pre-planning. Crisis, generally speaking, is when you have a loved one who's generally speaking, entered the nursing home, and you have to figure out a way to pay for it and maybe get them qualified for Medicaid benefits. Pre-planning is working through that process ahead of time. The former takes a lot more, as you said, a little more stressful. It takes a lot more hands-on work from your staff. Would you agree?
Oh, I 100% agree. I mean, because the pre-planning, kind of, you can be automated and fairly within reason. You know how much time in for what product you're going to get for the client. Where, you know, some of the crisis situations, it can seem simple, and then there's eight siblings, and then they start fighting, and then you're into a contested guardianship, and it can get out of control quickly. But that's what you have to do.
So let's talk about how then you built this practice up. So you decided to hang a shingle. Did you go out and rent office space directly, or were you working out of your home, or how did that transition?
I rented directly. To back up, how did I end up having so much focus on going out on my own? Well, my wife and I had a preemie in between our first and second semester of the first year of law school. So I spent, you know, a month and a half of my first year in law school in the NICU. So If anybody knows about grades, your first year is pretty well set after that first semester. So, you know, and then two, I just knew, you know, that I wanted to carve it out on my own. So prior to renting space, I had a Connex trailer full of office equipment. And as soon as I got the thumbs up on passing the bar, I was outfitted within 36 hours with a fully up and running office. No, it was a small office, but I was up and running.
And then how did you go about acquiring clients at that point?
As far as acquiring clients, well, let me talk about office furniture stuff. I mean, where do you go get it? Well, Craigslist. I got almost everything off of Craigslist. And you know, the conference table was $30. The laser used printer was $30, ended up being a $700 Xerox. So if you have some time, you can really get some deals. But the two books, or the most stolen book in any law library, is Foonberg, How to Start a Law Practice. And then he has a follow-on book, How to Get and Keep and Maintain Clients. I think those two books are invaluable if you're starting from scratch. And then even with the business background, my first frustration was, man, they don't teach you anything as to how to run a practice right out of law school. So I very quickly began a quest. Now, I went to a tech conference. There's a legal tech conference every year. I went in law school to try and figure out, right, what are the up-and-coming practice management systems? What do I need? And I was somewhat unique because everything I do in my office is on a Mac computer. And then once I eventually did get into estate planning, I sought out the business practice systems that were key in the industry. So for estate planning, I belong to Elder Council, Wealth Council, Gun Docs, Elder Docs, you know, those drafting management systems to make sure that I'm not drafting anything freehand. Another one would be Lawyers with Purpose. I've had very good luck with Lawyers with Purpose and still use their systems heavily. There are any number of other organizations. I also belong to the Life Care Plant Law Firm Planning Association. So there's just a number of organizations, and getting into those and actually taking the time, spending the money to go associate with others across the country and learn best practices, you'll grow in leaps and bounds by getting in those organizations and learning from other people's mistakes. And they'll freely tell you, you know, where they went right and where they went wrong if you get them alone for a cup of coffee or a drink.
You know, I think my experience has been in interviewing folks for this show and just kind of knowing a lot of solo practitioners around this area. The younger attorneys have no problem going to Craigslist or Overstock.com or any of those kinds of places to furnish and outfit their office. Whereas the older ones, and I count myself as part of that older crowd, frequently think, well, I got to buy new or acquire it all, you know, from one vendor. And as you said, you can save a lot of money if you do this with a little bit of planning.
Absolutely. I mean, I had a folder and just trying to figure out what do I need. I mean, what's the best bang for your buck. I knew from law school I had almost no problems with a Mac. I have over 30 Macs in my office now, so I've only had to retire two out of the 30 in almost 10 years, so I'm having really good luck with them.
So just as an aside, how come we didn't see you down in Orlando last week at Mac Track Legal? You're going to get an invitation for the next one for sure, because Victor Medina, who's been on the program now here three times, runs MacTrack Legal, and it's a conference for attorneys who use Apple products. And we hold it down in Orlando every year, and we just finished last week, and it was fabulous. So a guy like you with an affinity for Apple products and a practice like yours would really have a great time, believe me, at MacTrack Legal. But that's an aside.
Great.
So you start your office, and you're following Jay Foonberg's How to Start and Build a Law Practice book, and that's great for how to set up your office and how to initially start the systems to run your office. But somewhere along the line, you have to go out and get clients. So was your marketing strategy networking to start, or did you have a more systemic approach to acquiring new clients?
It was definitely what we call in our office relationship management, or going out and meeting and establishing a network. A big word of caution, you can throw a lot of money away at retail advertising. Believe me, hundreds of thousands of dollars I've thrown away. But to really get your best bang for the buck, going out and being intentional, meeting people in the right community, following up, making sure you have a designated plan of action as to what the next step is going to be. You have to connect with them on a personal level. You know, so we have a system in our office to gauge, you know, the viability of a relationship with me or with, you know, other members of the team, and just be upfront where it's not a, you know, how many referrals every time you meet that person. But over time, you're just going to have to track that stuff. I mean, I'm in practice for the next 40 years, so I'm trying to develop those 40-year relationships. But what you run into is there's only enough time in the day and do the work and manage the practice. But you can only truly manage about 10 to 20 of those relationships, or the rest of them aren't going to get enough time. All relationships are based upon deposits versus withdrawals. So you can only go so far, but that's your best bang for your buck to develop that network. Now, for estate planning, it was, you know, financial advisors, funeral directors, discharge planners from the hospital, and the list goes on. But once you get that base of network established from a relationship standpoint, then you can start to feather in, you know, some of your retail marketing. But you got to be careful. I think we track over 380 different referral sources the last year. So how much do I put in each one, and how profitable are they? And I can tell you down to a percentage, you know, what my return on investment is for radio, TV, newspaper, direct mail, and having a control of those numbers is vital to whether or not you're throwing your money away or making money.
Well, there's, you know, an entire week worth of discussions that we can have along those lines. Let's focus in a little bit about how you identified these centers of influence, as you said, financial planners, funeral directors, discharge administrative types at the hospitals and nursing homes. How did you go about, let's just pick one like financial planners, how did you go about identifying them and approaching them to try and build these relationships?
Well, just a plain Google search or within your community. Historically, what I found is most clients don't want to drive any more than 30 to 45 minutes. And you can't have 10 friends or 10 financial advisors you're working with all within that same 35 to 45 minute driving distance. Just not going to work. So you come up within that area or within that bubble, you know, two or three guys that one have a practice that is viable. And then we go through an interview process. You know, someone that I work well with is when it comes to a financial advisor, do they have a fee-based practice? Practice, or is it a transactional-based practice? And what we typically find is if they have a transactional-based practice, they're selling lots of life insurance. They're a younger advisor. They're looking towards the next sale. However, when you get more of a fee-based advisor, they're more interested in maintaining their portfolio, servicing their clients, and they just don't want anything bad to happen. Those are the ones that have a vested interest in a longer-term relationship. So I'm going through the interview process to find who is most viable to be in it for the long term, not the short-term referral back and forth as fast as possible.
So did you just reach out and say, hey, I'd love to get to know you, have a cup of coffee, tell you, see how I can help your practice grow? And
absolutely, just cold calling. And if the longer you're in the area, you know, you're going to start to meet these guys and you're going to come on their radar. But just being very intentional about it. Let's go for a cup of coffee. Let's go for lunch. You know, what's the next step? Hey, come check out my office is oftentimes the next step. I do a lot of informational sessions. So I'm always trying to get a commitment to, hey, come look under my hood, see how we're treating the clients, because that's how we would treat yours. This is a team effort. You know, I'm not trying to steer the ship. Now, there's a temptation for a lot of advisor or a lot of lawyers to get into financial services. If you deal in, well, this is just my opinion, if you deal in financial services or if you're allowed to in your state, you know, that's going to really hinder your ability to create a long-term relationship with an advisor, because that's what I've found to be a primary concern.
This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Market Circle, the makers of Daylight. Do you want to help more clients but don't have the resources? Do you feel overwhelmed by the amount of work to do that you can't even think about getting new clients? If this is you, I urge you to try out Daylight. Daylight is the Mac CRM that streamlines your practice and can save you hours of work each week. Daylight has helped thousands of small businesses, including my own, to manage more clients and cases without adding stress nor chaos. With Daylight, you don't need to fumble through files or notes to know where you are in a case. There's no more CCing your assistant on emails or passing around spreadsheets. Because Daylight now has a new team view that helps you see what everyone in your firm is working on. You can see everyone's appointments and tasks and easily schedule meetings for the entire team or a portion thereof. To learn how Daylight can help your firm, visit marketcircle.com/daylight. Be sure to let them know you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. That's Market Circle, the makers of Daylight. This episode is also brought to you by my friends at Spotlight Branding. I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to keep me top of mind with my referral network. Visit spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur. Spotlightbranding.com/TLE, brought to you by our friends at Spotlight Branding. So, Jeff, tell me a little bit about how you grew from that single office to you now have six offices in and around the area of practice. What motivated you to branch out to that degree?
Well, growth comes pretty quick. I mean, once you've been in practice, usually about that 2 to 3 year mark, if you're doing the right things, you're going to grow. From an overall perspective, I grew the practice so that eventually I would have the ability to maintain the lifestyle that I want. The reason Heritage is called Heritage Elder Law is that and not Banner Elder Law is because, one, I want to give my other attorneys the ability to step in the room with the same presence. I want to be able to eventually be able to reduce the amount of hours that I work and retire someday, you know, 20 or 30 years from now. And then two, I mean, when you have a solo practice and your name is on the door and then you retire, so do the employees that are working for you. So now that we have roughly about 15 full-time employees, I mean, that's quite a bit of responsibility to make sure that you're putting the things in place so that you're building a lasting business that's going to outlast you and or your name. So that precipitated a lot of the early on growth. Now, out of the six offices we have, two to three were in every single day. They're large facilities, and three are satellite that are oftentimes used for convenience for those crisis clients on the far reaches of where we touch. But again, and then trying to make a regional presence. You know, right now our footprint is we're within about 45 minutes drive of everybody in Western PA, and trying to build that lasting presence and start to build further on that brand so that we can be that lasting image for helping families in our practice.
So I'm going to assume that as you initially grew, that you found that there was a particular geographical area that you were servicing more frequently than others, and that you would benefit if you had a secondary office at that in or around that location. Is that right?
Right.
Well, and then the same thing happened, or did you strategically place some of these offices around to give you that broad footprint?
For our client base that we reach out to, there's a number of different things that they'll respond to, but the elderly community responds to fear and they respond to trust. So a lot of our marketing messages are based upon that. So what you're looking for is not the high dollar homes and the large estates. What you're looking for is, mom and dad that worked all their lives and then they have a paid off house and live in a modest community. Those family members, those family values, those individuals respond well to estate planning, protecting your stuff and not losing everything you've worked your whole life for. So more of your metro, the closer you get to the city, it starts to go the other way. So what we look for is those paid off communities, those suburban communities, the aging communities that, again, it doesn't have to be high net worth. The average client that we work with is 250 to 750, and that's the total net worth, including the house.
Right.
Those families want to make sure that they're taken care of.
Yeah, so it does sound like that you picked some of these locations specifically for their geographical advantage to servicing the type of client that you were looking to benefit.
Absolutely.
Great. So tell us a little bit about then staffing. You said you had four associates. I'm assuming they didn't all come on at once, or four total attorneys, and 15 team members. How are you structured? What is your organization, and how did those roles evolve and develop over time?
Well, in total, we've had as many as six full-time attorneys. And the problem with growth is you got to be growing for the future demand. So oftentimes when you're in a growth pattern, you got more staff than you have work. But if you keep growing, you're going to need to train that staff along the way to be there in the future. So it's somewhat of a delicate situation. And we went through a period of about 4 years where we had 100% growth every year. So that, after a while, it gets really hard to keep up with. But as far as structure now, with the offices, we have two of the attorneys, myself and attorney Cribble. We manage the crisis workflow. So the 60-65% of our practice that's the nursing home and the Medicaid, mm-hmm. because there's a lot of moving parts, and you got to have a very in-depth knowledge of each case. And so there's fewer cases. They're higher dollar cases, but there's a lot more going on. And then I have two attorneys the other two attorneys that are full-time, I have them focusing on primarily the estate planning. So it's a lot more, there's more volume as far as numbers of clients, there's more locations, but there's less complexities and less variations in the cases themselves. And then obviously myself, I manage the business component and the counseling and making sure that everybody is moving in the right direction. And then as far as the support team, we have dedicated paralegals that support the different practice areas. So we have three full-time paralegals, two full-time marketers that help manage the relationships with the nursing homes and also make sure we get the retail ads out on time. And then we have three additional, what we call, client services, front office, scheduling, rescheduling, making sure that the appointments are in the right place.
Now, my favorite question of the interview, and you've already kind of tipped your hand a little bit to be on my good side, in the sense that you said you had 30 max in the office. What role does technology play in your practice?
Oh, enormous. So, and I've had some bumps along the way. Trying to pick that relationship management software is key. And picking the right one.
Which one did you choose?
I've tried Houdini, Clio, Rocket Matter, Amicus Abacus. Or these are going back years.
Right.
But everything was so PC base that I've right now I've landed on a program called ActionStep.
Sure.
ActionStep's out of the Netherlands, and we've just had really good luck. I can build my overlays. It integrates email. It just integrates everything. And they have for estate planning and the elder law and the probate, they have the overlays for the client workflow already established. Everything here is heavily dependent on that system, the drafting software, and having a platform that can grow is vitally important.
So do you use ActionStep's drafting software, or do you use Elder Council and Wealth Councils?
I use them all, because ActionStep, right now, their drafting software only allows me to do some of the simpler documents.
Okay.
But we're seeing great progress. You know, when we started, they didn't have that capability. So they're going to be at the point where all the trusts are going to be able to be drafted right through ActionStep. But so we're hopeful and patient at this point.
And ActionStep runs on your Mac?
Yep, because it's all completely cloud-based.
Oh, so it's cloud-based. Okay, cool. And I see from their website, they also have integrated Microsoft Office into their platform.
Yeah, so when all of our documents get saved there, it's redundant, it's backed up, it's encrypted, and then they back it up. We back it up here too, so we got multiple redundancies. But when they integrate Office, so if you're saving a Word document or an Excel, you know, through ActionStep, it'll just pop right up and you can view it. So I think that's what you're referring to, possibly.
Yeah, exactly. That's interesting, because they're not a big player in the practice management space for law firms, but I think they're coming on strong, along with companies like Practice Panther, and as you mentioned, Clio and Rocket Matter, and some of the others. So it'll be interesting to watch what happens, and it's I'm going to stay in touch with you, because it's very interesting. Because of all the people we've interviewed, I think, although I've heard of ActionStep, you're the first one who's really been putting it to use.
Oh, it's an amazingly powerful system, and at the time, we're going back years, I had Clio, Rocket Matter, and Houdini. Houdini was close, because the engineer was a departure from Time Matters. But even then, it was antiquated, the way that the data was entered. I've just been very impressed. And two, it also gives you visibility on your upcoming appointments, pipeline, forecasting, cash flow, integrates your books.
And I was going to say, do you do your billing or your accounting through ActionStep as well?
We're going forward, we're moving our information in there, where we've always had segregated bookkeeping, just because our prior bookkeeper, was married to QuickBooks.
But right.
Going forward, I do a lot of my back office invoicing and accounting through myaccountingdepartment.com. It takes all the bookkeeping off of me, and they actually do all the invoices. I just got to make sure the checks actually hit the account and it gets scanned in and sent to them, and they handle all the books. So we're moving forward. If you want visibility on your pipeline, so you don't have to be nervous about making expenses, starting out, that would be a hindsight, starting out using it and getting over the hurdle and just getting all your data in there.
Right. And along those lines, does social media play a role in your practice?
It's not huge. They changed the algorithms on how you get your posts through on Facebook within the past year and a half. It makes it a lot more difficult. It has to do with the amount of content you write, plus images. And
right.
So it's really degraded our ability to have a huge, through rate on social media. LinkedIn, not so much. I would say Facebook, we still do. AdWords is really picking up speed for us. As far as the internet content, but I would like to say it was more of a presence, but it's in the single digit percentages to our lead generation.
And you have a great website. Did you do that yourself, or did you farm that out?
We farmed it out, but I structured the layout and the visibility on that, and much to the frustration of our provider. And Integrity Marketing runs that site, and they primarily do estate planning websites for just estate planners. And we got linked up with Integrity through the Lawyers with Purpose organization.
And I also noticed that you do a lot of workshops or seminars around the community, and it looks to me, looking at your website, that you also use Eventbrite to manage those events.
Yeah, event break's fairly new, so I might have to defer in my marketing department. So that was new to make sure that we can do automatic calendar slots and get people to be more timely. But yeah, we do about 250 speaking events a year. I got three out of the four attorneys doing the events because really look at ourselves as an informational based marketing firm. So the more information you can get out there, the client will make an informed decision. The reason we do that is we got to have the clients have some information before they come see us, because we do about 95% of everything in our office is a flat fee. So when they're coming in, whether they have $10,000 or $1 million, a will cost the same for the same guy. Contested guardianships and probate, you know, that's the hourly stuff. So I'm switching away from flat fees on probate. I'm getting eaten alive as some of these families can get interesting. But no, that's a huge departure from the majority of those in the industry. We're trying to commoditize it and beef up on staff and reduce my involvement and increase profitability. So it had a huge success with that flat fee. And that's really what I think distinguished us in having that enormous amount of growth a few years ago.
Going back to the seminars and workshops, you just book rooms at the library and various locations on your own, and then send out invitations and post it to your website. Is that how you go about?
That's fair. Our highest rates of return are on traditional newspaper and on direct mailing. Those are our consistently high rates of return. Now we schedule it. A smaller event. I really don't like to do events that are more than about 25 people. You start to lose some of the connectivity with the audience. And we don't offer dinner. We offer coffee and cookies. You want people to show up for the content, not for the meal. And we track the conversion rates at the locations and the attorney and who's doing well and trying to compare notes and make sure we're doing the best we can.
That's awesome. 250 events a year. That's a lot.
It's a ton, and we're up, I think, and we could be shy of that, between 2 and 250, just using that as a ballpark.
Hey, anything over 50, anything over one a week is a lot.
We're doing sometimes five or more a week, and it's just not to the community. What we're also doing is, how do we get so many numbers, is we're actively reaching out to care providers, nursing homes, personal care homes, hospitals, to be able to get the providers themselves the information that they need. Right? You don't have to lose it all. Here are your options. Your clients have hope. And what we do is we oftentimes are shorter ones where we're offered to buy lunch, and I spend 40 minutes going over the basics to train the team of providers at the nursing home or at the care facility. And then we go back every year and try and do an update or refresher, getting in with and then we do continuing ed for whether it be social workers or financial advisors, you know, trying to, again, position yourself as the expert. All those things together, in addition to private workshops for those financial advisors that we were talking about earlier, those start to add up when you got, you know, three or four guys doing those.
Well, and you're providing great value to that community with your expertise and your knowledge. And when you provide that kind of value, their natural reaction is to think of you when they have a client that needs services that you can provide. So it's a win-win for everybody.
Absolutely.
Great. Well, Jeff, listen, it's been a real pleasure having you on the program today. Tell our audience a little bit about how they can reach out to you and if they want to follow up on anything you had to offer today.
No, you can reach out to me directly at banner@heritageelderlaw.com. On our website, there's lots of resources about who we got working and where our offices are at. You can even, you know, take a look at some of our workshop dates. In the upcoming futures, we will be posting, you know, some of the previous presentations, and we're getting some animated videos ready as well. But again, heritageelderlaw.com. You can reach out to me, or if you want to call me, just look at the number and let my team know that you're an attorney, and you'll get through a lot easier. And I wish you guys luck.
Roger that. Okay, well, thanks ever so much for being a guest today on The Law Entrepreneur.
Hey, thanks, Neil.
Once again, I'd like to thank our friends at Market Circle, the makers of Daylight and Spotlight Branding, for being sponsors of today's podcast. Market Circles, as the makers of Daylight, provide the tool that I use to manage my cases, my clients, my calendar, my to-dos, the emails, and they do so all in one app that stays with me on my Mac, my iPhone, and my iPad. I use Daylight on my own in a solo environment, but you can also use it in a team. You can use Daylight to track the status of cases and delegate tasks to one another on your team, and you can see everyone's schedule all without having to interrupt anyone. Daylight is one of the tools that I use to stay organized, and it increases my efficiency, and therefore it only stands to reason that it'll do the same for you and your team if you use it in a broader environment. So visit marketcircle.com/daylight to try Daylight free for 30 days. And be sure to let them know that you heard about Daylight through the Law Entrepreneur in order to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. Also, our friends at Spotlight Branding, as always, have been very helpful in sponsoring this podcast. You know, I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to help keep me top of mind with my referral network. So visit www.spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in the law entrepreneur. So spotlightbranding.com/TLE to access your free gift. And as always, make sure that you visit our website, www.thelawentrepreneur.com, to see everything that's going on with the podcast and subscribe to our newsletter so that you can stay in the know and be the first on your block, so to speak, to gain insight into what's going on here. So once again, thanks for being here this time around. I appreciate your listenership. Hope to see you again next week on The Law Entrepreneur.